They shot him?
In Jesus' name.
He just shot his arm off. We got pulled over on Larpiner.
I told him not to reach for it. I told him to get his hand out.
Call me brother, if you need a hand, we all need somebody to lean.
What do we want?
Justice.
What do we want?
Now.
And what do we want?
Justice.
This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick, filling in for John Hockenberry. 72 hours of violence in America, the killing of two African-American men by police, one in Minnesota, one in Louisiana. The protests of those killings and others unraveled by sniper fire in Dallas as police officers are gunned down. The already impossibly complex national conversation about police and guns and race is now even more convoluted with someone, Dallas officials aren't saying who, targeting police. Dallas Police Chief David O'Neill Brown spoke to reporters in the first news conference following last night's killings.
The suspect said he was upset about Black Lives Matter. He said he was upset about the recent police shootings. The suspect said he was upset at white people. The suspect stated he wanted to kill white people, especially white officers. The suspect stated we will eventually find the IEDs. The suspect stated he was not affiliated with any groups, and he stated that he did this alone.
Part of the problem Americans have to unravel is how police patrol a nation where guns are legal and part of the culture, and where the Americans they stop or pull over own 300 million firearms. It also raises the question for many Americans, primarily people of color, how they stay safe even when exercising their right to own a gun. Nick Selby is a detective in the Dallas area in Texas. He's also author of the book In Context, Understanding Police Killings of Unarmed Civilians.
It was obviously shocking and obviously very, very sad for the families of the officers who were killed last night. I have to say, filled with pride watching the Dallas Police Department handle this situation so professionally, watching those officers run towards the danger, handling the situation, and most of all being as transparent and open as they were throughout the night, giving out information, which is really exactly what we need our police to be doing, giving out more data earlier, and that's exactly what the Dallas Police Department did today.
One of the real difficulties as the country tries to digest all this, it seems to me, is that there's this difficult conversation about police and civilians. There's a difficult conversation about race and about guns that we've been having all these many months and years. And now it's a conversation inevitably that's also about the killing of cops. And that's way more complicated.
I think it is. And I think that the dynamic that we have right now in the country is unfortunately one of, there's a lot of mistrust. And I think that a lot of people are speaking past one another. I think that both law enforcement officers, law enforcement administrators, government officials, activists, and just citizens are taking refuge in a position and speaking their position, but not actually hearing the other. And I think that to get past this, we're going to have to start having some fundamental trust that both sides want to make things better and listening more to one another.
Nick Selby, one of the issues that we did want to talk to you about is how police operate in a country that is awash with guns. The reality is that police are going to confront suspects all the time with guns in this country, both legal and illegal, because there are 300 million guns in America. We saw the case especially of Philando Castile in Minnesota, who, according to his fiance, had a legal weapon with a permit and told the officer. It raises the question of how police approach people when they know they have a gun and deal with that situation. What can you say about those many, many times that must happen?
Yeah, and without speculating on that, because we actually don't have the video, I will say, I'll tell you what I do, and I think it's instructive. Whenever I get pulled over, I will turn the engine off. I'll roll down my windows. If it's at night, I turn on my dome light, and I put my hands on the top of the steering wheel. The reason I do this is I want the officer to see that I'm making an effort to make him feel safe, and it also removes the need for me to move my hand quickly or reach something to get something. It's all right there. So if you are at that point carrying a concealed weapon, or if you have a gun in the car, you know, those of us who carry concealed, we've already made a lot of adjustments in our lifestyle. We buy special clothes, we buy special holsters. This should not be any different. Keep your driver's license, your weapon permit, your registration, keep it all in the same place as far from that gun as possible. And then as the officer approaches and he tells you why you've been stopped, hand him your papers, and then once you have the papers in his hands, you say, "Officer, please be advised for your safety. I'm a concealed weapon permit holder. I do have a handgun in the car. It's located in a holster on my right hip. What would you like me to do?" And when you do that, you've given him the control. Sometimes they'll actually tell you to get out of the car. They might want to disarm you. A lot of times, they'll give you sort of the equivalent of, "Hey, don't show me yours, and I won't show you mine."
I want to play you a piece of sound from a journalist at the Washington Post who was on the show yesterday. We were talking about how the Washington Post has tracked the 509 Americans killed by police so far this year. For a little bit of context, this is Stephen Rich of the Washington Post.
The numbers really haven't changed on a lot of fronts. The majority of victims are still white people, but black people are killed at a rate of about 2.5 times that of white people.
A rate of about 2.5 times of white people. That's the Washington Post data, Nick Selby. And that raises the question of this conversation that you and I are having about what to do when a police officer approaches and you have a gun. I think a lot of African-American people hear this conversation and say, that does not always work for us.
Sure. And the strategy I just mentioned is I would believe, and my colleagues would believe, is the absolute safest strategy. I do want to point out that the Washington Post, while in those numbers, what the Washington Post itself found last year was that fully 90% of the people who were shot by police and killed by police were in the process of a deadly attack at the time that they were shot. This is not just sort of arbitrary killings. And the 2.5 times is really a population-controlled number that is disputed by a lot of academics. I will not say that the fear or trepidation that African-American drivers have is unreal. I believe that that's very real. But in terms of crunching those statistics, I think that the more important thing is when you as a driver, whether you are white, black, Hispanic, doesn't matter. When you as a driver go out of your way to slow things down and give the officer the control of the situation, they will almost always respond in kind, and they will respond reasonably.
There is some reason to believe, however, and I go back to Philando Castile in Minnesota, that he did inform that police officer, maybe not in such a procedural way that you're describing, Detective Selby, but he did a lot of things right and still wound up with a deadly gunshot wound.
I literally cannot argue that, because I just don't know what happened in that case. And I think that, you know, what we have on that case it's an interesting case of dueling narratives on the same video. We're going to have to watch and see how that plays out.
Let's talk about the person that maybe you're not as confident about, however, somebody who has a gun in their pocket. How dangerous is that gun if it doesn't come out? If that person says, "I've got a gun," or if you see part of a gun, or you suspect they have one in their pocket, but they haven't brandished it.
That's a terrific question. It's actually at the crux of it all, right? In our book, we talked about killings by police of unarmed civilians, and many people believe that because a civilian is unarmed, it means that he's not dangerous. We had two people who were unarmed who actually had already murdered someone by the time the police arrived last year. And similarly, you know, when I'm going to the store and I have a gun that's in my holster and I'm squeezing the tomatoes, I might be armed, but I'm certainly not dangerous. It really does come down to the context of the situation. If someone has an illegal gun, even, and they're not reaching for it, they're not doing anything particularly with it, that's not something that gives me an immediate concern. Where I start to get concerned is where people start to give us combat indicators. They start to give us indicators that they're getting angry. They're ready to start using physical force or deadly force. That's when the danger level really comes up, and that's, I think, something that officers are generally very, very good at detecting. And generally good at detecting it correctly.
So, Nick Selby, from your perspective, author, detective, Texas detective, where do you want this conversation to go that the country's having right now in the context of all the killing that we're seeing of suspects, African-American suspects, and also police officers?
From my standpoint, the lowest hanging fruit in this debate is that law enforcement agencies and officers have to be more transparent about the data that they provide. They have to provide more, including video, and they have to do that earlier. That's an absolute must. Transparency is the key. Sunlight does cure the fact that the public has a right to know how it's being policed. I think that the second lowest hanging fruit, which is often sort of glossed over, is the fact that 52% of the people, the unarmed civilians who died last year after an encounter with police, were suffering from mental illness, a physical disability, a drug addiction, or more than one of those three things. Law enforcement officers should not be the first line of defense against things like mental illness. But as it turns out, that's what's happening. If you take a look at our jails across the country, large percentages, 30, 40% of the people in there have serious mental illness. This is not a police problem. This is a societal problem. And I do believe that in order to bring the numbers down, in order to bring the violence down, we as a society have to come together and recognize that we have a mutual interest in getting help to people who are at most risk of getting into contact with an officer that could turn fatal.
Nick Selby is a detective in the Dallas area in Texas. He is author of In Context, Understanding Police Killings of Unarmed Civilians. Detective Selby, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.